Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in the Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. For more information, visit ellenbecker.com. My guest today is Jim Lewis, president and co-founder of the National Society of High School Scholars. For the rest of the show, we'll just be calling that NSHSS. That's an honor society for outstanding high school students. And Jim's joined us today to talk about the FAFSA, as many parents of college students know about, and some different changes and delays that they're having, as well as give some scholarship tips. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
This is going to be great. I've got a couple kids in college, like we talked about before we started to record. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about this, and I know our audience will as well.
Looking forward to sharing some insights. Yeah, go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, so tell us about your background. You know, how did you start NSHSS? And I guess, you know, we always like to know the why behind that, you know, and some of the different things that you want to share about today.
Oh, thank you, Heather. I had the opportunity to establish NSHSS some 21 years ago, and it was co-founded by myself and Mr. Klaus Nobel. And Mr. Klaus Nobel was a senior member of the Nobel Prize family out of Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay.
So really excited about working with Mr. Nobel in creating an honor society which recognizes outstanding high school students. And, you know, the mission is to recognize these great young students and help them through their challenges and opportunities from high school to college and then college to career. Mm-hmm. And the ability to recognize a diverse group of students was one of our founding members, our founding principles for NSHSS. A lot of students were doing very well academically in school, but we found that a great number of them were not being recognized for their achievements. And when we looked at the opportunity to connect young students and build an organization around them so they can become the best version of themselves. And Mr. Nobel, of course, with the Nobel Prize, the individuals that have historically won them have been typically older white males.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Nobel and I started talking about creating an honor society that focuses on excellence. We wanted to create one for young people. And when I met Mr. Nobel, he was 70 years old and excited about working with the youth. And he promised, he said, "Jim, I want to spend this last chapter of my life working with outstanding students." And we created NSHSS 21 years ago.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And, you know, he's such a great guy, and he recently passed away, so I do miss him dearly. But he was involved in all of our activities. He would fly in from wherever he was to our member events around the country and around the world, and was a great keynote speaker. And when you can talk about the Nobel family and the Nobel recipients, you know, these young people can hear this message of hope and excellence and the ability to strive for their very, very best. So he was very involved for 19 of our first 21 years, and we have many scholarships named after him, and we still do events to Stockholm, Sweden. We have Nobel Week within NSHSS where we send students to Stockholm for that week, and they have an opportunity to learn about the process, meet the laureates, hear their lectures, and also spend time at the University of Stockholm, which is great for students to have that experience of being there for Nobel Week and seeing what higher education looks like in that part of the world.
Yeah, that's quite an inspiring background of that. And what a great way to also inspire students through those programs. Yeah. How did you choose the education space?
You know, I've always been devoted to I guess, when I think about it, helping others in need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was, you know, a child of my father worked for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And every 3 or 4 years, we moved from one location as he got a promotion to another. So growing up, I was always in a different school system, having to make new friends. And, you know, he'd come home and say, you know, hey, we're moving from Florida to Kansas, and we're moving from Kansas to New Jersey. We're moving from New Jersey to Atlanta. So, you know, when I got this, you know, I guess it was exciting opportunities, but as a young child, it really affected me and, you know, provided me with the tools to go into a new environment, meet students, learn about myself, and really learn about the different cultures here in the United States. So growing up, having that challenge of moving and growing and loving education as a part of better understanding who I am and who I wanted to be. So I thought it'd be very appropriate to still stay involved in education. I love working with students and families, and especially within NSHSS, really helping students and families that may not have the access to the appropriate information. So many school systems are, you know, underfunded and overburdened. And, you know, when you have one counselor dealing with, you know, several hundred students, it's very difficult to provide that opportunity for resources. And within NSHSS, we have many resources on our website. And then also we do many, the seminars, the webinars, gosh, there's one or two usually a week, and it's focusing on issues of college admissions, striving for excellence, and that whole transition period of who am I, who would I like to become, and then providing that network for other students and their parents to share some of the frustrations and opportunities in the higher education space.
And I can imagine you've seen so many changes over these 21 years.
No, absolutely. Oh, my God. it's exciting and daunting at the same time. And I can't wait for the next 20 years with AI and how things are continuing to change. We're, I guess, in for some good times in the future, and especially in the medical field. And I know your son, one of them, studying biology. I don't know if he's getting any insights of, you know, how medicine will be changed through all these different opportunities within AI. But I'm happy that there are these changes. And, you know, sometimes there's challenges with opportunities like we're going to be talking about later, FAFSA. You know, there's some issues and there were some problems with the rollout, and there's still some challenges. But, you know, the net gain, when this is all done and everything is finished in this sort of, their first year of launch, things are going to be a lot better for families. So excited about change, you know, encouraging families to be patient through this process, knowing at the end, there'll be more students that will be able to go through the process because it's going to be a lot easier to understand. And the ability for families to get information quicker is something I'm very, very excited about. But we're not in that space quite yet.
Well, I think when I heard you say it's going to at the end of this, right, or when we get through the rollout, that it's going to be a lot better for families. You know, that has me sold, because I know that the FAFSA form can be really daunting. It can feel like a beast of a project to gather all your information. You know, for the work that I do, I have access to all my information that I would need for this, for all what our family would need. And I can imagine that obviously not everyone's in the profession that I'm in.
Absolutely.
And so what it would be like for, you know, so many different, you mentioned like just the all the different situations, the diversity of our families across the United States.
No, it's so important. And within NSHSS, we have a large number of first generation students. So about 26% of our members are first gen. And we have a focus on diversity and inclusion. We have over 50% of our members are non-white. And the ability to help families across the board, you know, regardless of their income, and have them in one organization that can connect them with other students that have gone through some sort of similar process. You know, it could be challenges in high school that they have the ability to connect with their fellow students, the opportunity to connect students and parents on wonderful topics. And then even, you know, once a student gets accepted to a university, you know, there's a lot of questions about where should a student, which dorm should they live in? You know, what should I major in? Who are the best professors? So, you know, providing that network of young achievers is really exciting. And it's been 21 years, but it feels like two, you know,
I bet.
It's just gone by so quickly. And, but focusing on, you know, students and parents that don't have, you know, the access to information like you have, Heather, mm-hmm. you know, where all the financial information is readily available and, you know, pages and pages and pages of questions. So, you know, I applaud the Department of Education for looking at this issue and condensing it. So the ability to have less questions so they can get that information from other sources and be able to turn it around quickly is mm-hmm. their goal. But, you know, with anything new, there will be challenges and there are challenges.
Right. And that's all really wonderful information. And I feel a lot of hope, right? Like you said, for the community that you're serving. That mm-hmm. help is needed, right? First generation, a quarter of your members are first generation college
yes.
students. You know, that's huge. So with that, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we can dive right into what is this FAFSA change that we've been talking about. Some people may even want to know what is the FAFSA. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is Jim Lewis, President and Co-Founder of NSHSS. That's an honor society for outstanding high school students. Today, we're talking about the FAFSA. Jim, why don't you tell us what is the news and changes that we all need to understand?
Heather, yes, this is interesting times in higher education, so that's a great question.
Right.
Yeah, the U.S. Department of Education announced last week that 30% of the millions of forms already submitted this year could contain errors and must be reprocessed. And that equates to about 7 million applications. And while this issue is identified and resolved, this puts extraordinary stress on students whose financial aid forms won't be sent to colleges, at least until starting May 1st, but probably it's going to be much later than that, Heather.
That is really disappointing. I can imagine for people that thought, I'm going to be the responsible. I'm going to get on top of this. I'm going to do this right away. And then to know that a third practically could have lingering problems.
No, it is frustrating for everyone involved, but you know, when you think about students and parents and they're in an environment where they're trying to choose between one university and another, mm-hmm. The amount or extent of aid that they'll be receiving from the institution is a very significant part of that equation.
Right.
So families are on hold. Many universities haven't submitted anything yet. So, you know, when you think about it, typically, you know, in May, June, everyone knows where they're going to be going to university. Mm-hmm. Now, and unfortunately, because of this change, the opportunity for families to decide this in May or June is going to be later than that. So, you know, when you think about colleges starting their fall quarter or semester in August mm-hmm. or September, you know, that time period really gets crunched.
And, you know, with having two kids in college, it seems like just yesterday, that they were graduating and celebrating and where are they going and being so excited about their dorm, so excited about their move-in date. And we knew all of that for them, you know, long before the school year ended. So,
no, absolutely. You know, when you went through it with your two sons, you know, it was a process. And, you know, we encourage all families to submit the FAFSA form, regardless of income. And it's something that could be done. And even though there may be students that haven't submitted it yet, they can still submit it. So it's a benchmark that will allow universities and others that are looking at aid to a student. And the important part is, you know, we encourage students to dream big at NSHSS. So when they're thinking about where they would like to attend college, we encourage them not to limit their selection based upon finance. We ask them to dream big and look at universities not only in their state, but, you know, in their region, nationally, or even internationally. And that provides a roadmap for families to think about, what does it mean if my son or daughter has an opportunity to study, you know, at UC Berkeley or one of the other great universities in the country? But so many families opt out of those institutions because they feel as though they can't afford it.
Right.
And what we encourage is apply to those universities that you're passionate about, you know, try to align your potential major with some of the best institution that focuses on that, that level of academics that you're looking for, and get admitted first. Once you're admitted, then the next question is how do I pay for this? And that's right. when the universities have an opportunity to share with the families through this FAFSA process, here is a financial aid that would be available to a student. So we encourage you, your listeners, to think big, you know, look at institutions that they may feel initially, oh, we can't afford X, Y, or Z, when in fact, those universities are seeking a diverse pool of students. So don't self-select out of your dream institution. Think big, go for it, and then the ability to say, well, how do I pay for this? And that's where the FAFSA process is really critical. So, you know, it's important to understand that this is a very delicate time in education. My heart goes out to all those families that are sitting around the kitchen table thinking, you know, do I go to the University of Georgia or Georgia Tech, or I went to Georgia State here in Atlanta. But, you know, those choices that they're facing now as they look at, you know, where I've been accepted, and then how are we going to pay for it? And through financial aid, that's a big part of it. And I know later in the program, we're going to talk a little bit about scholarships, because there's other ways that families can reduce the cost of higher education. But it's important now for student and families, when we're thinking about FAFSA, to stay in touch with those universities that they've applied to. So even though they may not have heard something from those institutions, I would encourage your listeners to reach out, find out where their, you know, information is, at what stage they should be learning from the institutions. But a lot of times the institutions are now waiting on the U.S. Department of Education to provide that. So if they can reach out to those institutions to say, I'm still very interested in attending your college or university, and when is sort of the time horizon when they may hear from those institutions with the amount of financial support they may be able to receive.
Right. And I think that being persistent is and patient is the name of the game, is what, from what you had just said. You know, those are big pieces of it. You know, in addition to that, how else have things changed, or how else can families work through that change? Like, I know you said, stay in touch with the institution, ask questions, maybe have some patience, but yet be persistent. You know, more things to be able to be prepared for what might come back if something is incorrect.
It's, I guess, you know, it's. I think you did a great job in summarizing what the possibilities are. But I guess my advice on that, you know, directed to your question, would be don't rush a decision. You know,
that's a good way to think of it,
like,
too.
You know, I think I can afford this smaller school or this one that I'm not so excited about. You know, so don't I guess, feel pressured to make that decision because really it's life changing. And, you know, we love to see students aligned with, you know, the institutions that they're going to attend, and the ability for them to not feel like they have to make a decision in May if they still haven't heard from that institution that they really want to go to. So, you know, I guess the ability to say, take your time. And a lot of times students, I know we see this with NSHSS, really look at life through their own lens. And what I mean by that, you know, they're taking it personal. They're saying, why haven't I heard? And is there any issues, or what's wrong with me, or what do I need to do? And we try to encourage students and the parents to say, you're in the same boat with millions of other students. So, you know, don't take that burden on yourself when you know that there are literally millions waiting for the same information. So the opportunity to stay calm, to think through it, stay connected with the universities, and then look for, you know, and we'll talk a little bit later, but, you know, scholarships are readily available. And we have some NSHSS members that have paid for their entire education through scholarships. So there's other opportunities for funding. FAFSA will be corrected, and it will work beautifully for this next round of students that will go through this. And I'm so happy that you were able to get your two students. I believe one's a sophomore, one's a junior. And, you know, do you remember back in the days as a parent trying to figure out, how do we choose a university? How do we pay for it? It's such a difficult time, and especially when you have a brilliant student that may come home and say, Mom, Dad, you know, I want to be a music major or a theater major or something else in the arts. And then when you look at the financial side and try to give them guidance and saying, wow, I wanted you to be a doctor or an engineer. So we see that a lot. So it's not only the university that the students and parents are talking about at their kitchen tables, but it's a university and what they want to study. And, you know, the advice we give here at NSHSS is about 65% of students don't really know what they want to major in. And, you know, when you hear that, I see a lot of smiles. I see one on your face. I know you're doing this to Zoom, but, you know, it's something that if they know that 65% of entering freshmen don't know what they want to major in, that's a huge piece of relief. And then a huge chunk that think they want to major in something, get into the institution and then switch majors. And, you know, when you think about the economics of education, you know, a parent is saying, oh, my gosh, it's going to be $10,000 or $20,000 a year for four years. You know, how do I get a return on investment? And that's where this financial aid is so important. But the ability to say, gosh, we're trying to guide our family members to making the best decisions possible. But it's nice to be able to be in a safe environment once a student gets into an institution and can explore who they are. And they could always double major. I think one of your sons or maybe both of your sons are double majoring. So, you know, being explored to different academic topics and then looking for financial aid, even once they're in college. So a lot of families think, oh, I need to do this in high school. And then they stop it once a student is enrolled at an institution. But you can look for sources of financial aid and scholarships and grants all through your undergrad, graduate, and your professional degrees.
And for different programs, too, as different things show up in your life, or if, like you mentioned, changing of majors or deciding in what field you want to be a part of, you know, students are expected to make that decision. They're maybe not even 18 yet because they're picking the college based on what the programs are there and where they can have success and what they think they want to do. And really what we want is our students to be successful wherever they are.
No, absolutely, Heather. And just a personal note, my daughter was very involved in dance and she knew she wanted to be a dance major. And I kept saying, well, what are you going to do with the degree once you graduate? And she's, oh, I want to answer, you know, I want to have my dance studio and I want to dance my entire life. And, you know, we took about 2 or 3 years discussing it. And finally, she agreed with me, even though I'm in this space. So I'm giving her good advice you know, to maybe get a dual degree. And she ended up getting a degree in dance and business administration. And she went to the College of Charleston, We hated to lose her from the Atlanta community here, but she went to college in Charleston and loved it. Had a dual degree, ended up in Washington, D.C., working for Avon Cure for Cancer. She would organize the walks across the country, raising money for Avon.
Yeah.
And then a law firm found her and brought her in to do recruiting for this major law firm. Now she's in charge of global programs for them in their HR area. So she's doing professional development in the women's programs at Dutton's, which is a worldwide law firm. So here's somebody that just a few years ago in my mind was dance and business. And now yeah. she's running global programs for this significant major law firm.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news for parents is, you know, let them follow their passions, let them explore and encourage them to think big and see where they end up.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. With that, let's take a break. And when we come back, we can really get into the scholarship side of things too. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor at Ellenbecker Investment Group. And my guest today is Jim Lewis, President and Co-Founder of NSHSS. So Jim, you were talking about the FAFSA and college application and decision-making processes. Before we move on to scholarships, do you want to kind of recap the future of FAFSA?
Sure. I guess, you know, in summary, I would suggest families breathe, take a lot of deep breaths as they're anxiously awaiting word from the universities to find out, you know, how much aid they potentially can get through FAFSA. But the good news is that there'll be more students eligible for more scholarship dollars and financial aid in the future based upon what we're seeing now. So we've got a pain point going on now in this launch that continues to fester. But we do feel like it will be resolved shortly, and the ability for families to wait, not make a quick decision, but get the best decision on who they are, where they want to attend by waiting for all the universities to respond back to them. And the good news is in the future, it's going to take a lot less time for families to complete this form. So even though there's been challenges this round, the next rounds and into the future, is going to be a lot easier for families to navigate this. So we're thrilled about that that process on the end. And, you know, if families need some additional information on some of the FAFSA changes, there's a great website, and I can share that with you and the listeners. It's www.studentaid.gov. And that's a good resource for the FAFSA changes.
That is a good resource. I've used that for some other topics as well. Yeah, that's great. So, and I think, you know, with more access to be able to pay for college, right? We know the future is higher education is needed in so many career paths that could look a lot different across different industries and interests. You know, we're focusing on the college bound or the college interested students, at least. So let's kind of turn this to scholarships. Like you said, they do kind of connect to the FAFSA in some scholarships and in some ways, but what would you want to share with the audience on the topic of scholarships?
Heather, I don't know where to start. I'm so excited about this, about this topic. You know, when you think about the high cost of higher education in America today, you know, it's high and going higher. And for families, when they think about, you know, their assets and liabilities and what does it cost to live today, and when they're, you know, stressing out about the high cost of education, you know, looking at federal aid programs that are available is one great way to cut down on the cost. But certainly there's a lot of opportunities out there in the United States for students to look for scholarships. Mm-hmm. And within NSHSS, we have a large number of students that get part or even all of their tuition paid in books and fees through scholarships. So, you know, I want to encourage the listeners to really think about not waiting for FAFSA to do anything, but take this important time and be laser focused on scholarships. They work so hard in, you know, completing their college applications and thinking about higher education, identifying their passions, you know, getting great letters of recommendation. So take that same energy that a student would put into their college application and apply that to scholarships. And there's so many scholarships available today, and there's some that are, they have money left and students haven't applied for certain scholarships. So the ability to take something that makes a student unique, mm-hmm. and it could be their passion or their sports, it could be something that they are personally involved in as a volunteer, whatever their passions are for higher ed, if they could go to Google, and Google can be their best friend, you know, type in whatever their passion is and scholarship, and the ability to get wonderful resources on what scholarships are available to students and their families to apply for. And there's not one hard and fast deadline on these scholarships, so they're administered throughout the year. So unlike, you know, the FAFSA problem, you know, there's a time crunch to determine what the university can offer. Scholarships are available 24/7. And the ability for students to research those scholarships that they potentially be interested in, the ability to say, wow, I didn't understand that there are merit-based scholarships. And by merit-based, those are based upon things other than financial. So for families that can say, well, we're financially sound, we don't even need a scholarship for our son or daughter, there could be outstanding scholarships out there that could help families in need and families that are looking for expanding access to education. So again, you don't want to self-select out of a university, and you don't want to self-select out of scholarship opportunities. And the ability to think, who am I? Where do I want to study? And the ability to say, what scholarships? Because there's so many community-based scholarships that are there to help students in their local communities. There are religious scholarships, those that are affiliated with religious organizations. There are some based upon height, which you wouldn't think of. There are scholarships for tall people. So whatever makes a student unique, take the time to research it and do this, you know, on a very aggressive level. And, you know, the opportunity to say, you know, I want to research this and spend several hours a week, and I want to start applying for these scholarships. And some of the scholarships are renewable. So they could get a partial scholarship and then an opportunity to get additional years paid for, and the ability to think about how do I make my application stand out? And it's the same premise of what the students just went through as they're applying for the universities. Mm-hmm. So they can take that hard-earned knowledge of themselves that they've been working on and writing about and use that information for these scholarships. And the ability to make sure that they are providing a unique description of what makes them special and why they deserve a particular scholarship. And what they would need to do is think about these topics, talk to their family members and friends, and say, what is it that you would encourage me to include in the scholarship application? Once I complete the scholarship application, you know, have your family and friends read it. You know, is it accurate? You know, we got to make sure that the grammar is correct and everything is appropriate. But, you know, get feedback from your families and friends. And if you have the counselors that can help you, identify great people that can write letters of recommendation for students in their scholarship piece. But the ability to think about, I want to take this precious time that I'm waiting on FAFSA and turn it into a drive to succeed in lowering the cost of higher ed through scholarships. That's a really important part. So, you know, my advice to families would be think about scholarships. And here at NSHSS, we offer a lot of scholarships, and our partners offer scholarships as well. But we have something called Your First Scholarship. And for families that don't know what the process is to applying for a scholarship, the scholarship's open to the public. Our web address is www.nshss.org. Families can go to that and review what does it take to apply for my first scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a helpful tool for families to look at, navigate, and understand the process. And they could submit an application to us, but then they can take that process. And it's really a training tool on how they can apply for many different scholarships. And once you've got your first one down and you understand the process, you know, you can run with it. And then you're better suited to apply and have a high quality application in front of a scholarship provider.
That's really amazing. Like, I'm getting really excited about this, and I am far graduated from college.
Well, go back and get a graduate degree.
Maybe I will. With that, let's take a short break, and we will come back to continue talking about all this great knowledge that Jim's able to share with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is Jim Lewis, President and Co-Founder of NSHSS. So we've been talking about aid, financial aid, scholarships to help students pay for college. Dream big. I love that you brought that up. And as we talked even about the scholarship, something that I thought about was, you know, we want these students to think of themselves as somebody special, as somebody unique. And so it's been interesting to think about how they can write those scholarship applications to really promote themselves, because they're the ones that have to do that, right? No scholarship board is going to be able to pull that out of an application. So they need to really lead with that. And I think that's something that, you know, I just was thinking about it when we were on our break.
Yeah, Heather, I agree 100%. And, you know, sometimes students are timid. Well, I'm going to say sometimes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time students are timid.
Right.
And, you know, they may be a little ashamed of some things that they've gone through in their life. But we've all gone through difficult times. Mm-hmm. And when they're writing the scholarship applications and even the university applications, we always encourage students to be authentic.
Yeah. You know,
share the struggles, share the things that make them who they are. Because a lot of times as you go through life, things happen and you come out the other side a better person. And the ability to stand out by, you know, saying this happened in my life, you know, and how have I grown? What have I done to overcome a challenge? And the ability to share that in the scholarship applications is really, really meaningful. So yeah. They don't want fluff like, oh, I'm a good student and, you know, I love to study and whatever else they may say that's generic. I would say dive deep into their psyche and go for it.
Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, it really shows like resiliency and you got to think about what are the characteristics that you learn from that. So thinking a bit outside of financial aid, right? FAFSA forms, outside of scholarship applications and grants and things that you get from universities and from the aid programs. What else should families, students, parents be thinking about as ways to get some additional help to pay for college when that is just going to be beyond reach for their income and their college savings so far?
No, that's a really good question, Heather. And first and foremost, I really want to encourage students and families to elevate what education can do for them. So I just don't want families to think I can't afford it. I'm not going to do it. So, mm-hmm. you know, the first founding premise in a family's heart should be, how do we elevate our students to become whatever it may be? So education is the key. So I would say never give up on getting an education. And there's ways to go about this where you don't have to pay for anything, or you can find a way that's a little bit less expensive. And just to give you a couple of ideas based upon your question, Heather, you know, what comes to my mind, like here in the state of Georgia, and I'm sure in Wisconsin, the ability to look at, let's say, a junior college mm-hmm. that is affiliated with one of the other universities that are part of that system-wide group of institutions. So a lot of families can consider going to a junior college, knocking out their first year or two at a lower tuition rate, allowing their student to mature and understand how to study, how to write papers, what is it like to be, you know, a freshman or sophomore in college. But a lot of families can start with a junior college, and then given the grades, they have an opportunity to transfer to another campus. And if they can do well in the junior college years too, they can apply for scholarships and financial aid that will help them with a good set of GPA, the ability to prove themselves and then go on to a four-year institution. So I would say think about, you know, junior colleges, even trade schools. You know, education is so critical regardless. You know, you think about the Ivy Leagues or what do I want to do in this environment? But, you know, the ability to get an education at a great trade school, learn who they are, become passionate about an industry, and then grow through education to be the best version of themselves. So, you know, I'm encouraging families not to give up on junior colleges and trade schools. They're wonderful, and it's a great gateway for them to be successful. But beyond that, you know, when you talk about families that may be struggling, there's so many opportunities that families may not be aware of and don't stop to think about it. But, you know, there's wonderful programs through the Army and the Navy, the CIA, the State Department. These agencies offer opportunities for students. The CIA, for example, they'll hire at 18. And most families don't know that, but you can be applying for full-time work with the CIA as a student and going through their program, but you can be hired at 18 and the agency will pay for a student's tuition and expenses. There is an upper limit. I don't recall what that upper limit is, but the ability to be associated with one of the government agencies like the Army, Navy, State Department, CIA, be accepted at 18 and have their 4 years of college paid for, which is amazing. And the CIA works in, with all majors. The ability, regardless if you're an art major, a dance major, a language, they're open for all majors and they can be attending any university. And the ability to start your career at 18 and then you can retire in 20 years, you know, that's 38.
Right.
So, if my math is correct. So, you know, you go to a great school, you don't really have to pay anything. You've got a wonderful job, a great learning environment. You know, you have to give back to the agencies or the Army or the Navy or the Air Force, the Marines, but, you know, you could have your total education paid for undergrad, grad. And then also, you know, if you want additional degrees, you know, you can ask the agency about exploring opportunities. So, you know, the ability to connect with an outstanding agency that they're all looking for top talent. So, right. You know, the ability for a family to say, hey, I've got a great student here and I want them to really grow into the best version of themselves. You know, look for these opportunities within some of the government agencies that are seeking outstanding students to hire. So there's a pipeline of talent and a pipeline of opportunities for students that can't afford college at all. So I would say, think big, dream big, make it happen. And if they keep education and self-improvement as one of their guiding principles, they'll be very successful in life.
That's wonderful. That's such a great way to kind of really wrap up the whole conversation we've had. I love this. Jim, if any of our listeners want to learn more about the work that your group does, where could they go for that?
Yeah, it's nshss.org. And please come visit the website. We're here in Atlanta. If anyone is visiting Atlanta or wants to come and check out some of the universities, let us know. And, you know, I want to wish you and all those that are listening in today the very best as they dream big and have an exciting life. I'm just thrilled to be a part of this.
Thank you so much for this. This was just a wonderful time I've spent with you.
Thank you so much, Heather.
So remember, Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to learn more about EIG and check out any of our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at the office at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I have made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.